Now listen, this is important. Before the sun sets on the third day, you've got to get dear old Princey to fall in love with you. That is, he's got to kiss you. Not just any kiss. The kiss of true love. If he does kiss you before the sun sets on the third day, you'll remain human permanently. But if he doesn't, you turn back into a mermaid, and you belong to me.
No, Ariel!
Hi, I'm Joe.
And I'm Tiana.
And this is Next Door Villain,
a podcast where we uncover the villains to discover their humanity. Hi, everyone. We're back for the Next Door Villain podcast. I'm Tiana.
And I'm Joe.
And today we're going to talk about the world's greatest sea witch on the planet, someone who I think a lot of you are very familiar with. She's groovy, she's an octopus, she is...
sexy.
She's awesome.
Okay, stop teasing. Her name is Ursula.
I'm sure the listeners just couldn't take the suspense.
Ursula, of course, from the Disney film The Little Mermaid, and actually originally from the Hans Christian Andersen fairy tale from the early 1800s of the same name, and more or less the same story.
Yeah, with just a few
gruesome edits. Tweaks.
Yeah. It's probably been since, 1994 or whatever, since you've watched The Little Mermaid. Maybe earlier, maybe later. I don't know. But we're going to give you some summaries to help remind you about Ursula.
Yes, just like every episode, we do a 30-second competition, which means absolutely nothing. But we have a little bit of fun with it to see who can give a better description. And if you'd like to go on Twitter after you listen to this episode and vote for who did a better job, that would be awesome.
Yep.
And Tiana, I think you were bragging to me before we started recording that you were excited to go first.
Sure. I mean, I'm just excited to do this.
I'm happy to let you go first.
Okay.
3, 2, 1, go.
So, Ursula helps poor, unfortunate souls. It's sad, but it's true. She's a very busy woman. And she just hasn't got all day, but to have her give you legs, it doesn't cost much, just your voice. Yeah. You know, she helps them. She fortunately uses a bit of magic. They weren't kidding, and they called her a witch. And that, my friends, is what it's called, plagiarism.
Oh, no.
But no, fun plagiarism.
Yeah, I think people will get it.
Yeah.
If you didn't, go back and watch the film.
Yeah.
It's $14 if you want to watch it right now.
Which is so weird. It's a classic, huh?
Yeah. Well, and also, Disney is coming out with their streaming service.
What? I didn't know that.
You don't know about this?
No. So now it's another $8 a month kind of thing to watch The Little Mermaid whenever you want.
Right. That's the idea. I mean, and other stuff too. Yeah. All the Marvel films, the Star Wars films, you know, because Disney owns all of that stuff now.
Ursula and Kylo Ren have a lot in common.
Do they?
No, I mean, they're owned by Disney.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right. 3, 2, 1. Oh, go. I forgot to say go. Let me start over.
Okay.
Okay, now start.
Ursula is a sea witch, and she's kind of an octopus, except she only has 6 legs. Oh, she has 2 arms too, so I guess that's 8 in total, so that could be octopus-like. She's a larger character, and she's very sexy and very smart, and she has magical powers, but instead of using her magical powers to get what she wants, she convinces people to engage in these contracts where if they fail at what she wants from them...
Stop. I forgot to time you down.
Yeah, I feel that was unfair. I thought I had more time left.
You can see it as a good thing because I was so intrigued with what you were saying that I forgot to time down. Okay. How about just for some context too, we can talk about Ursula, like what happens in the movie?
Uh-huh.
Do people remember what happens?
I don't know. I didn't until I went back and rewatched it.
Right. I didn't either.
As long as we're talking about the story, I think we should go back to the original story, which just because I found it really fascinating. So the original story was written by Hans Christian Andersen in the early 1800s, and it's very similar to The Little Mermaid in the Disney version. Ariel is this mermaid, and she's in love with this human boy, and so she wants to have legs so she can go on land, and so she goes to the sea witch Ursula, and Ursula gives her a potion that will give her legs, but in exchange, she has to give up her voice. And what I really like about the original story is that the potion, in addition to giving her legs, also makes her the greatest dancer in the world. But every time she steps, it feels like she's stepping on 1,000 knives and her feet bleed.
That's horrible.
Yeah.
What an intense metaphor for love. Uh-huh. Yeah, I'll feel pain in order to be with my love on land.
Ultimately, it does have a happy ending and there's a lot more to it. But in that original story, Ursula really is just the side character who isn't an overarching villain like the Ursula mm-hmm. we know from the Disney movie, which I think is the Ursula that more people know.
Right. And in both versions, though, she's seen as someone who says that you have to pay a price for what you want. Mm-hmm. It's kind of similar in that sense for both of those versions.
Right. But in the Disney movie, she's got bigger plans in mind.
Yeah, she does. So in the Disney movie, what happens is that Ursula wants to be the leader of the sea. That's for sure what we know. So she, and Ariel is the daughter of King Triton, who is already the leader of the sea. So she goes through this huge plan of being like, okay, Ariel, you get to have legs and be on land, but by the third day, you have to have true love's kiss. If not, then you belong to me. And then Ursula makes sure that she does not get that kiss from Prince Eric by the third day. So then Ariel is prisoner, but then King Triton is like, no, I want my daughter to be free. And he can't break that contract. So he says, okay, I'll take Ariel's place. And then now King Triton is Ursula's prisoner. And by default, Ursula becomes leader of the sea. And then she dies.
Yeah.
No.
And perhaps one of the most graphic Disney deaths, she is stabbed through the midsection by the broken bow of a ship.
That's insane.
Yeah.
And so she's just this giant octopus that gets stabbed like all the way through. It's like Game of Thrones.
Right. Yeah. Like all the Game of Thrones deaths where they always just like thrust the sword through their midsections. Right. And it's very gruesome.
It is very gruesome. That was the scary part for me when I was a kid, I think.
Yeah. 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 They're in the ocean. There's a storm happening. Yeah, that's
she's
scary
large,
stuff.
Like even yeah. bigger than before.
Yeah.
She's like this gigantic thing, and you're like,
yeah. yeah. And the movie doesn't really give us much as far as a backstory for her, mm-hmm. but when they turned it into a Broadway musical, they gave her another song where she does kind of explain her backstory a little bit. And the song is called Daddy's Little Angel. And she basically talks about how she was one of four daughters of the king. But she was like ugly and her father didn't love her and he loved all the other daughters more. So basically she kills them all and then kills her father and she makes it look like an accident so that she can take over the kingdom. And she does, but she forgot about her little brother. And because it's a patriarchal society, when her brother comes of age, he takes over the kingdom and then banished Ursula.
That gives her more of the backstory that she was seen as an outcast and wanted to maybe prove people wrong, be the sea witch who's in charge of everyone else when everyone else didn't allow her to be queen or didn't allow her to be herself.
Uh-huh. Well, and ultimately what it comes down to, as with a lot of the villains that we talk about, is that she wasn't loved or cared for or nurtured. And because of that, she lashed out. And that's not an excuse to do bad things, but it's like, hey, maybe if we just like give more love and attention to troubled people when they're younger, they won't try to take over the world and kill people later on in their lives.
Yeah, I'm really glad I don't have siblings so that that potentially can't happen in my family. Yeah. Yeah, I guess I could.
I mean, I don't know if it's a major concern in most families, but every now and then, you know?
Yeah. Going off of her backstory, there's a part in the Poor Unfortunate Soul song that intrigued me, and I didn't like pay attention to this part until recently when I was doing research for this episode. And you can tell I really like the Poor Unfortunate Soul song.
It's a really underappreciated song.
But I know.
One of Disney's best, I think.
Has a really awesome beat to it, you know. So powerful. Up there with Moana songs, you know. I also sang this song in the shower yesterday. Just so that everyone knows. That's an important thing to know. So she says, I admit that in the past I've been a nasty. They weren't kidding when they called me, well, a witch. But you'll find that nowadays I've mended all my ways, repented, seen the light, and made a switch to this. She made a switch to helping poor unfortunate souls in return for something else. And it implies that maybe in the past she just used magic for her own gain and not for anybody else's gain. So it's kind of like she is trying to improve herself through conducting a business. Because before maybe she just was mean to people and that's it. But maybe she saw that's not that great anymore. It's best to be mean to people but also do something for them. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it actually fits in really well with the backstory we get for the musical, where she probably used her magical powers to kill off her siblings and her father to get her power. And ultimately, she lost that power. And now she's decided that instead of using her magic to take over, she's going to use these contracts, these legal relationships that she doesn't need to use her magic in order to get power because she's got these contracts.
Yeah, and it's very admirable that she uses these contracts because, you know, she sees a need where mer people or sea people want to have a better life or they want something that they can never have. So she uses magic and these contracts to be upfront to say, this is what you will get and this is what your payment is. And of course, if you break that payment, it's a pretty rough punishment of being like weird squiggly things in the sea. I think they're called like polyp or polyp. I don't know how to pronounce them, but I saw on Wikipedia that those weird squiggly things, you know, that are like in the sand of the ocean,
Yeah. They're the people that she helped, but they didn't fulfill their side of the contract.
Right. So that's rough. But she uses a contractual agreement to, you know, exchange goods and services like everything else in our world, especially even in the capitalist world on land. Mm-hmm. You know, we go to work every day and we give services to people and they have to make payment to us. If they don't make that payment, there are punishments that come with that. And so we are kind of like Ursula in the fact that we provide services and then we get payment as a benefit to us too. So both people are benefiting from it.
If you think that her payment terms are harsh, consider the fact that what she's offering is truly spectacular. Mm-hmm. Like Ariel wants human legs. She wants her body to be fully transformed into a different species. So, you know, that's like not something you can pay for with like a couple $1,000 or sea dollars or whatever they pay
with. I know. Ariel now has a vagina. Surprise.
I suppose that's true.
How incredible. She just snapped her fingers or put some potion and boom. Mm-hmm. There you go.
Yeah. This contract issue is a complicated one for me. When we were kind of asking people their thoughts on Ursula, multiple people said, well, she made this contract with Ariel. It's Ariel's fault that she entered into this agreement. And at first, for the longest time, I was thinking about this and I was like, well, yeah, but it kind of seems like Ursula took advantage of Ariel. She's young. She's vulnerable. Like maybe this contract was legally okay, but it seems pretty morally wrong. Mm-hmm. But I found this really interesting article online, and I'll post a link to it. It's actually a blog post by someone, and it's a defense of Ursula's contract. One of the most interesting parts of it for me was that I was really conflicted because Ursula tries to interfere with Ariel's ability to complete her goal. She tries to prevent Ariel from being able to get true love's kiss. And I felt like that was wrong. And what this person says in their blog is that there's no good faith clause in the contract that says that Ursula shouldn't be able to interfere. But on top of that, even if there didn't need to be one, there's no reasonable reason that Ariel should believe that a sea witch wouldn't try to interfere, you know?
Yeah.
I'm really butchering this up. You should just go to the show notes and read the article because this person does a much better job. But it really made me think twice about how I felt about this particular contract.
Right. Like on one hand, it wasn't very great how she used her, what are they called? Stingrays? No.
Flotsam and Jetsam.
What kind of fish are they?
I think they are eels. And eels. Another interesting fun little fact, flotsam and jetsam are actually sea terms. And I'm probably going to mix this up, but I think flotsam is a term for stuff that is intentionally thrown overboard to prevent a ship from sinking. And jetsam is the stuff that's left in the water overboard unintentionally because a ship sunk.
I don't know
what that means, but I thought that was kind of interesting. That's where those names come from.
Right. It's a metaphor for wrecking things up.
Yeah, I guess. What were you saying?
It's not great for flotsam and jetsam to have stopped Ariel in working out the terms of her contract. But on the other hand, the contract did not say that Ursula and Flotsam and Jetsam can't do that. So ethically, it was okay for Ursula to do what she did, morally not.
Perhaps the best defense of the contract is the fact that at the end of the film, when Triton is trying to get his daughter back, he tries to destroy the contract, but even with all of his power, he's not able to do it. Mm-hmm. So that kind of tells me that in this realm, this is a legit contract. Even if it's not fully legit in the United States, in this particular world, the contract is accurate, and not even the powerful executive leader is able to stop it from being enforced.
Yeah, you can't even rip the thing up with a trident.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't go to court in that realm, I feel like.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there must be a court if there's contracts, right?
Maybe.
I don't know.
But Ursa's like, yeah, you're prisoner, whatever.
The contract issue is complicated, and I can see how you could be on either side of it.
Right, but... and Ursula is obviously on the contract is legit side.
Yeah, and like you said, legally accurate, morally questionable.
Yes, indeed. Morally questionable, like all of the villains we talk about.
Yep, yep. Ariel definitely should have had a lawyer present.
Yes. And I don't think Sebastian could be that lawyer.
No, he's a composer by trade.
Oh, darn. You know, there's a lot of reasons to like Ursula, though, even though she is morally questionable. Like everyone else in this world, you know, I don't think anyone is completely good or bad. Even Joe, you are probably bad in some ways.
Certainly. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Especially you. No, just kidding.
Gosh,
but okay. But we can take a moment to talk about why we like Ursula and why she's so compelling, because I know we're not the only ones who think that she is quite a compelling villain.
Mm-hmm. And there's a few specific things that she does I think we can point to, but I think really what it all comes down to is that she is like... she's like an embodiment of like a direct opposition to societal norms. Particularly in the society she lives in, which is worse, I think we have to assume is a very patriarchal society.
Right.
And it's like she's enlightened and she sees and understands the world for what it actually is. And she chooses intentionally not to conform, which is really cool. The biggest way that she chooses not to conform is that she understands that your voice and your ability to advocate for yourself is more important than... Mm-hmm. The way that you look.
Yeah, and this article from Bustle also specifies that Ursula knows even more than Ariel that the voice is so important to use to gain power, because she kind of tries to convince Ariel that you don't need your voice, and Ariel believes her, but we know that Ursula deep down is thinking, I'm gonna get this voice so that I can be able to seduce Prince Eric, which that in turn makes Ariel fail. Which, you know, after a bunch of other steps, I become the sea witch who is in charge of everyone else. And she knows that the voice is more important than even trying to look or be attractive or quote unquote attractive to what other people think.
And I think what Ursula really understands is that the society thinks that looks and appearance and presentation matter more than anything. But what Ursula knows is that even though that's what it seems like, in reality, the voice and your ability to advocate and speak out for yourself and persuade other people is really what gives you power.
Right. And Ursula is so good at using her voice to really convince people. And she comes off as really pushy and assertive and kind of aggressive, right? Like, she's like a saleswoman.
Uh-huh.
And I have met a lot of women who are, you know, this way. And it's not bad. They just have a business to run. So they're gonna really talk to you. Like, do you really want to buy this thing? Here are the benefits of buying this. These are all the things you can have. Sign your name, you know.
Yeah. And once again, when she's convincing Ariel to sign the contract, she's very honest with her. She says the payment is very steep and that mm-hmm. the punishment for failure is harsh, but right. I'm going to do this amazing thing for you. So she mm-hmm. she knows that she has to build that trust relationship by explaining the difficult sides of things too. She's yeah. very good at manipulating.
I'm posing a question that I can't answer.
Oh.
To kind of help us be like, in what ways have we been like Ursula to kind of further relate to her?
Uh-huh.
In what ways have you been a pushy Ursula in your life, aka aggressively trying to convince someone to do something like someone mm-hmm. else? So like I ask this question and then I actually can't think of an answer for myself.
Uh-huh.
Because I'm not a very pushy person, which also means that I probably should not be a saleswoman.
Uh-huh.
it's just not my strength, right? So,
yeah. Well,
but not being a pushy person has also been a disadvantage to me sometimes when I really need someone to do something for me, but I'm too nice to be like, well, even though I did that for that person, they're not going to pay me back. So, you know, and I just forget mm-hmm. about it, right?
Well, I think that I can answer your question. I don't consider myself generally a very pushy person, but I think that I can be when I need to be, like, for example, in a job. So my first full-time job out of college was as a leasing agent for apartments. And so it was my job to convince people to rent from our apartment complex. And where I was working, it was a market where there was way more apartments than there were people looking for apartments. So it wasn't easy to get people to come rent from us because there were tons of other options all around town. So I had to be really pushy in order to be successful. And so I think in mm-hmm. that sense, you know, I can use that experience to understand what it's like for Ursula. And, you know, part of me does feel bad sometimes for being as pushy as I was to get some people to rent because I wanted to be successful at my job, you know? So mm-hmm. I guess that's an area where I feel like I can relate, and I'm not sure how I feel about it. I'm glad that I'm not doing that anymore. But as a salesperson, I always tried to find a way to persuade people while also being as open and honest as possible.
Because those things come hand in hand, being friendly as well, which Ursula was, but also being kind of assertive. It's like a mixture of both to get someone to trust you and then take and then buy what you're selling.
Uh-huh.
And I think you can feel good about that because it's not like you were like a slumlord or anything. It's like,
right.
I've heard a quotation that to be a good salesperson, you have to believe in your product. You know, that it will actually do good for people. Mm. And so that also makes you a good salesperson. And I'm sure Ursula feels that way too. Like she's like, I fortunately know a lot of magic. This will be really of benefit for you. And I know she believes in her product, which also makes her pretty credible.
Yeah. Well, and she has to do a good job to maintain credibility so that people will keep coming back to her.
Yeah. Ursula is also very like sexy and confident, as we've mentioned before in this episode.
Yeah, she's yeah. one of very few female Disney characters who are both large and undeniably sexy.
Yeah, and I know, you know, people are really impressed with the fact that, oh yeah, Ursula represents, you know, body diversity and, you know, fat acceptance in the media. There's a slam poem by Melissa May called Dear Ursula that you can watch on YouTube if you want. And she really talks about how Ursula is such a great, you know, is such a great character because she's unapologetic about who she is and her body and her largeness, right? And so one hand, it's like, oh, great, there's some different representation, even back in 1989 when The Little Mermaid came out. Of course, on the other hand, when I read stuff about that, I think, well, why does the fat one need to be the villain, right? Like, I'll be more impressed when they make the hero the one who is not conventionally seen as quote unquote beautiful, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know if that'll ever happen, but maybe, I don't know.
In the meantime, I mean, Ursula is a pretty inspiring character, even though she was a villain. One of the things that speaks most strongly to her confidence in herself is that she clearly has an understanding of what society thinks is sexy, because she transforms herself into Vanessa to get the prince to fall in love with her. And Vanessa is what you would think of as like a stereotypical attractive woman in society. And so we know Ursula has the ability to look whatever way she wants to look. And she chooses to be a large, powerful, sexy, independent woman, and totally unapologetically. And you don't see any bit of self-doubt in her. And I think that's incredibly empowering and exciting to see.
Yeah. She chooses to be her true self, except when she's manipulating Prince Eric, but mostly herself.
Right. It's not, she doesn't turn into Vanessa because of her own insecurities.
Right.
She does it because she wants to become the most powerful person in the ocean.
I also like your point about Ursula is not afraid of taking up space. When you first meet her, you know, she's kind of in that shell cave and she just expands her whole body, like throughout the whole thing with her, with all of her legs. And like when she sings Poor Unfortunate Souls, she like dances around the entire shell. And that's really important that she's comfortable taking up space, because, you know, a lot of women are kind of socialized to look smaller, to kind of like when they're on a subway or they're on a bus, just even in public in general. You know, I know myself included, women tend to kind of close their legs, close their arms, and then men kind of man spread right next to you. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of women have the expectation, even subconsciously, to be small and to look small. But that oftentimes makes a woman look not as confident as she should be able to look. And Ursula just doesn't give a flying rat's ass and is just like, here I am. I am just here and in this space and spreading all throughout it. And that's a very admiring quality and part of going against the grain and going against societal norms too.
Yeah. And if you're a dude and you don't believe that manspreading is a thing, just take a look at how you're sitting next time you are sitting at a desk or on a couch or on a subway train, and then look at how all the women are sitting around you.
Right.
And I think you'll find it very apparent what's going on. And like, maybe be conscious about that.
And maybe women can manspread a little bit more when you, I don't know, everyone can equally manspread, maybe.
Right. Well, I don't know if they can, you know, if there's tons of space, go ahead and spread it. But if you're on a crowded subway and there's like 10 people standing and like three women squished together across from you, maybe take a look at your legs and see how many spaces you're taking up.
Yeah. Look at your legs. Look at your choices.
Yeah.
I also like Ursula a lot because she, I don't know if Disney purposefully did this, but she and Ariel are like the complete opposite. Like, it's a huge contrast between characters, because Ariel is pretty innocent. She's young. She's seen as pretty and really abiding by a lot of societal norms until she tries to become human. She's lovesick to the point of not thinking through decisions. And so Ursula is everything that Ariel is not. Ursula knows what she's doing. She's, you know, has had a life of experiences, and she, you know, she has confidence. She has a lot of agency and knowledge about magic and life. And when I was little, I wanted to be Ariel. And I'm sure every like little girl in the 90s wanted to be Ariel, especially because she was a mermaid and she was pretty. And we always wanted to buy those little like Ariel outfits that you wear in the pool, which makes you look kind of cool, but also makes it hard to swim. And I don't know. But yeah, I wanted to be Ariel. But now that we're talking about Ursula and all of her great qualities, you know, it sounds much cooler now to be an Ursula. You know, teaching girls at a very young age to be like Ariel, because she's the hero and the good one, might be a little bit problematic, because it's almost like being taught that we should give up our voices and give up our power in order to be with our boyfriends, which is not that great, you know. So yeah, be an Ursula.
Yeah. Ariel really is not that smart. And maybe it's a little bit forgivable because she's young and hasn't had a lot of experience, but you know, she probably should have listened to her father And when you put any real thought into it, I kind of start to think that King Triton really had a point. He did really seem to care about his daughters, and yet maybe he got a little bit of a temper sometimes, but his anger, I think, is really understandable when you consider the fact that the humans, like, actively eat their, like, friends under the sea. And we see multiple times in the film people eating seafood, and we also see plenty of times where the merfolk are engaged in friendly relationships with those same types of animals. And so letting your daughter go mingle with those people is like letting your daughter go hang out with cannibals like is a society of people that eat you.
She's like, this is my third aunt twice removed you got on that plate. No.
Anyways, we should probably kind of wrap this up. What's a real world kind of lesson that you learned from Ursula?
Use the tools that you possess at your disposal. So you can really take your skills and what you're good at. Like Ursula's good at magic, and she utilizes that as a business and takes advantage of those skills. Sometimes I have a lot of skills that I don't really use on a day-to-day basis, but maybe I should, and then turn that into an opportunity or turn that into money or something, right? So she's good at seeing what she's good at and what she can do and turning it into something. And maybe more people should do that. You know, you go to your work 9 to 5, but maybe you're not utilizing all of your skills. But in your free time, you could start to think about what you're good at and the skills that you possess and how you can use that for the benefit of yourself and for other people. Mm-hmm. How about you?
I think one thing that Ariel, no, not Ariel. Ariel teaches me that I should learn.
Ariel?
Yes, Ariel teaches me that I should listen to people who are smarter than me and you know, not act irrationally when I'm feeling emotional. Ursula, however, teaches me that confidence is more important than just about anything else. Like the way that you carry yourself and present yourself and hold yourself. I feel like I never question anything about Ursula's identity. Like, I never question that she is sexy or powerful or smart, because the way that she holds herself and portrays herself, she just exudes those things. And that's more important than anything else that she is, or, you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
Hopefully our listeners do too, because that's I think the best I'm going to do.
No, yeah, I get that. Man, level will make you do some crazy things, man. It'll make you get legs. It'll make you lose your voice. It'll make you just go crazy.
Yeah, so I think that's probably a good place to wrap up. We do have a short story to share with you all about Ursula, and we'll be releasing that next week as a mini bonus episode, which means if you have your own thoughts about Ursula that you want to share with us, you can send them over email, Facebook, Twitter, or you can even call into our voicemail line. That phone number is 567-343-3359. And if we get enough responses, we'd really like to work them into that mini episode so that we can share some of the thoughts and feelings that you have about Ursula as well. Once again, that voicemail line is 567-343-3359.
This episode has been recorded and produced by Joe Anderson and Christiana/Tiana Hennings. All artwork on our website and on all social media is done by Erica Nitschke.
If you are enjoying the show, we love to hear from you. We've got a Facebook page and a Twitter at @NextDoorVillain. You can also reach us on email at nextdoorvillain@gmail.com. And if you like what you're hearing, we'd love if you could leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe wherever you are listening, because I think our podcast is available just about anywhere that you get
except
your podcast.
SoundCloud. Yeah, except SoundCloud, because we don't want to pay for it.
Yeah, too bad. If you're on SoundCloud, you can only listen to 2 or 3 episodes.
Yeah. Yep.
Anyways, that's it for this week. We'll see you again. No, we won't see you. We'll be back again in about 2 weeks-ish.